Yves Menghardt was born in France, and he later graduated from the HSA Business School in Lausanne, Switzerland. As a young student, he wanted to become a doctor to help and serve people. He later decided, however, that medicine wasn't his true calling, but he pursued his passion to touch the lives of people via health and nutrition. He loves to travel, and so he joined Nestlé when he got the opportunity, and he held various positions around Asia and Africa, including Japan, Sri Lanka, Hong Kong, and Vietnam. He has worked for Nestlé for over 30 years in 10 different countries. And now he's living in Dubai with his wife and three sons. He's been appointed as chairman and CEO of Nestlé Middle East, where he aspires to make a difference for the region through health education, sustainability, and creating employment opportunities for millions of young people. Why did you do a display of such quality in a quiet place like this where the footfall is so low?
Here, for instance, we've talked about the Maggie journey regarding ingredients. It's a way to illustrate concretely how we manufacture our products and the care we have around manufacturing our products. It's also, for instance, for us as part of creating shared value, health and safety, youth and diversity and inclusion are very important notions. You know the level of unemployment in the region. In fact, our youth Alliance for Youth, which we started in Europe, was really because it was perceived that in some countries like Spain, for instance, 40% of the youth is unemployed. And we took this also into the Middle East because we have similar situations where we have high level of unemployment within youth. And for us, it's all about helping them to be better equipped to start into an active life. So, of course, we have, for instance, graduate programs where we hire young graduates, but we also have curriculum vitae clinics, we also have apprenticeship, we have internship, which help the students or postgraduate to at least start having being more familiar with the working environment and helping them to eventually find employment. We started in Saudi Arabia with what we call a center of excellence because we realized that the type of education that young Saudis were receiving didn't really prepare them to the environment, the more formal working environment. Yeah. So we have, for instance, one program on sales. We have one dedicated for ladies on nutrition because we also need eventually medical delegates. And we have a general one which is more to be familiar with the working environment, etiquettes within working environments, so that the day they apply for a job, they will be better equipped.
Part of the work that we do, as part of my social work that we do, is that I always say this, it's end of education, but long live learning. And learning how to learn, learning how the mind works, learning how thinking works. And those are the kind of things that the modern child now, the young person, needs. And that's why I find these kinds of vocational programs very interesting. Do you do anything like that to really empower a whole generation of young people? Not just get jobs, but to actually empower them?
Yes. You know, somehow the way we work at Nestlé very much embody what you mentioned, because continuous learning for us is very similar to continuous improvement.
Right.
And continuous improvement is from a more business point of view, but continuous improvement as an individual, to become an ongoing basis, to try to become a better oneself.
Yeah.
And I think that continuous education is, in my view, very similar to curiosity.
Yes.
Leadership, one of the elements of a leader, which in my view is important, is to be curious, to discover, not to be afraid of the future, but on the opposite, to help discovering it.
I almost talk about IBM Watson, because I work very closely with them, which as a cognitive computer, what it's doing is, it's 25 years ago, the internet commoditized and democratized content and knowledge. It's available to all of us. Today, cognitive computing and artificial intelligence is democratizing and commoditizing expertise. Expertise. So if you're a lawyer, if you're an accountant, if you're an expert at anything, your days are numbered, because expertise is going to go into the computer. So the left side of the brain just goes away. So now we're left with the right side of the brain, which is love, humanity, so intuition, yeah, curiosity, serendipity, yes, all of these things.
EQ,
which makes us human. And a lot of the work that we're doing is on this side of the brain. How do we develop this side of the brain? How are companies like yourselves, which run a factory and a process, that a lot of these things will get automated. Anything that can be automated will be. You need to make money. And anything that cannot be automated will be 100 times more valuable, which is the human side, the EQ side. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely right. And we are at a phase of great transformation. EQ is something 20, 30 years ago, we probably started to talk about it, but we were very shy to talk about emotional quotient or emotional intelligence. Everything was about IQ, because if you knew more than somebody else, you would have had a better chance. Today, I would tend to say that we're evolving towards a phase where the more you will be able to adapt and help others to perform better, the better chance you will have. It's something which we do on daily basis with everyday coaching. And everyday coaching is going both ways. And I think earlier you talked about reverse mentoring. It's something which is important, but again, reverse mentoring may often be around more IQ topics, because you have a gap of knowledge between generations. But reverse mentoring and everyday coaching around EQ is definitely becoming a very important asset.
One of the things I talk about in a lot of my presentations is about not just EQ, but all of the multiple intelligences. Because Leonardo da Vinci basically said you need to be able to use all of your intelligences, your spatial intelligence, your spiritual intelligence, all of the elements which have become an integral part of who we are. And I think we, in the industrial age, stopped using them. And we didn't train ourselves for that. Now we need to go back to nature, go back to basics, to start connecting with our other intelligences. Because mothers are very good at that, because they are intuitively very good at protecting the child. But we become more robotic. And I think companies, and I see this environment, and I find it fascinating that I'm in a factory. Bravo to you to have visualized that.
I think it's part of that evolution where, just to survive, as humans, we needed to understand why and how.
Yeah.
Now, younger generations are helping us to focus on the what for. Mm-hmm. And the whole notion of what is the purpose behind it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something which is close to our heart, because we strongly believe that at Nestlé, we are driven by purpose and guided by values. The purpose for us is to enhance quality of life and contribute to a healthier future. And I think it's a purpose, enhancing quality of life. It's somehow a reason why many of us can get up in the morning and be ready to contribute for a better tomorrow. I think it's that notion of purpose is more and more important for the younger generation.
We're working towards a tree of life. Share with us your thoughts, and then we'll go back and do a flashback about your life.
I think this tree, first of all, is made, or the leaves are made with packaging of our products.
Right.
And it's all about sustainability. It's growth and sustainability, and very much linked to some of our endeavors which are part of creating shared value. We have, for instance, the Nestlé Cocoa Plan. We also have the Coffee Plan. We have the whole questions of end-to-end sustainability, sourcing, raw ingredients. And this is part and parcel of the way we do business at Nestlé, because we are very much aware and keen to make sure that whatever process we have in manufacturing our products are sustainable.
You know, you mention shared value regularly, and there are many definitions of shared value. Very often I see it as a platitude. You know, it almost goes in a PR statement somewhere. You seem to be living it, but can you define it from your perspective, what genuinely is shared value,
yes,
and how it sort of permeates society and permeates your environment?
I think a lot of people have in mind corporate social responsibility.
Yes.
And to a large extent, corporate social responsibility is often associated with signing a check.
Exactly.
So you sit comfortably at home and you make a donation. For Nestlé, creating shared value is all about doing things together for the good of the employees, of the consumers, of the customers, but also society at large.
Yeah.
So what we do, for instance, regarding a cocoa or coffee plan, is to help farmers to have better crops, to be able to premiumize the raw material they will be selling. We educate them. We do the same in countries where we are linked with liquid milk, where we help farmers to look after their cows in a better ways. Of course, creating shared value starts with creating employment. And I think this is part and parcel of looking at all the elements from the start of creating employment, working with and for the communities we are in, and making sure that what we do is sustainable. And for instance, this factory has zero waste to landfill. We are in the process by the end of the year to be able to be 80% relying on solar power in Almaha factory. So these are things which, when you put them together, is really about creating shared value together.
Over the last 10 years, Nestlé has had a lot of pushback in terms of its PR positioning on water and various other elements working, in, let's say, in the last 5, 6, 7 years, especially in the region that we're working in terms of taking us forward from there.
I think one very good example was the work we have been doing, for instance, in Iran, where we have helped the large farms that you have in Iran, one in particular which has 10,000 heads, to be able to have a milk which is fit for consumption, based on the Nestlé criteria, and which could eventually be used for infant formula. And this is something even the authorities were not aware of in terms of quality of the milk which was sold in the marketplace. And it's working together with these farms, helping them to better appreciate the level of antibiotics or to make sure that we don't have alpha toxin, that they were able to reach a point where now the quality of their milk is of infant formula standard.
About 10 companies, or probably even less, about 7 companies in the world control about 80-90% of all of the brands related to food and around that, Nestlé being one of the core leaders. What are we doing to literally look to the future of health as opposed to selling today?
First, let me put the size of Nestlé into perspective. We represent less than 1 per 1,000 of the total food consumption in the world. We are very, very minute.
Okay.
We have a certain share in some categories of branded products. There's no doubt about it. But within the overall context of what is being consumed every day, it's very, very, very small.
Okay.
The health, nutrition, health, and wellness has been at the root of Nestlé when Henri Nestlé invented his first product, Cerelac, which is an infant cereal. What we do today is covering different fronts. First of all, we work on portion guidance. Secondly, we reformulate our products, reducing sugar, reducing salt. we have activities like for Maggie, even around Ramadan, where we promote one spoon less of salt. We have a program which is very close to our heart. It's Nestle Agile Salima, which means Nestle Healthy Kids. We developed it with the American University of Beirut in 2012, and we started in Beirut running it in schools. It's a program which helps teachers to teach to children all about nutrition, health, and wellness in terms of drinking more water, eating more vegetables, eating more fruits, making sure that they have proper portion of food, and exercising more. And this has now been proven to have evidence-based results that the children going through this training are eating more fruits and more vegetables. The Ministry of Education in Beirut has made it part of the curriculum for the children 9 to 12. We have taken that program and we are working now in Dubai, also in some schools. We are looking at Jordan to launch it, and we want to gradually roll it through the region. Because for us, we strongly believe that, first of all, the age 8 to 12 is the beginning of the age where a child can make his own decision, yeah, and can say, no, I will eat a bit more of these, a bit less of that. And we strongly believe that education is at the root of a healthier future.
Eve, let's, in the classic Hollywood style, do a little flashback into the early stage of your life. As you were growing up, what was inspiring you? What were any moments that you remember?
You see, I think I've always looked forward, and I'm the youngest of four. Okay. And I have to say that my older siblings were, for me, really a focal point.
Right.
I wanted to grow faster, I wanted to learn more, I wanted to be the way they are.
Did that make you more competitive? Did that make you more, you know, how did you develop as a person?
Probably competitive, but certainly more curious. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to discover, and I think it's also probably why I joined this as an expatriate.
Right.
I wanted to discover the world. Yeah. I wanted to discover new communities, new way of thinking, new habits, new history.
Yeah. You developed, as a young person, your first qualification or your education was in medicine. Could you tell us what guided you there and why did you leave?
I remember since I was 10 or 12 years old, I really wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was to touch people. Mm-hmm. And eventually during the studies, after 2.5 years, I realized that this was maybe not my destiny. Mm-hmm. And that within the context of business, I could also touch people.
Yeah.
And I think joining Nestle was also linked to this, because our purpose at Nestle is to enhance quality of life. Mm-hmm. And I think the medical roots are also about enhancing people's quality of life.
Yeah.
So somehow I always tell young people that doesn't matter what you do, think about the reason why you do it, mm-hmm, and think about the purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. For me, a job is only a tool. It's a way to achieve something.
Yeah.
It's not a destination in itself.
How did you get your first job? Were you a super smart student? Did you do a massive CV? I mean, how did you actually
approach it? Not really. We were at the University HEC in Lausanne, in
yes,
Switzerland.
That's right. I know it well.
And we organized together with IESEC. I was president of the students' committee.
Okay.
And with my friend, who was president of IESEC, we organized days where companies would come to the campus, mm-hmm, and students were free just to attend some sessions with them. So I attended meetings with fiduciaire, with the bank, and also with Nestle. And interestingly enough, in fact, I'm still in contact with the person I met, the first employee of Nestle, okay, that I met 30
more than 33 years ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was the beginning of what is today history.
So you've never had any hardship. You had a nice home, you got a nice job, became president of the student union. You've never really been tested, have you?
I don't know. All depends what you mean being tested. When I was six, we moved from France. I was born in France to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. I still remember this because somehow you had to leave certain roots behind mm-hmm. and start from scratch again, especially having friends. I think we all go through some difficult times. I remember my first expatriation when I was in Japan. One weekend where I think I sat for 36 hours in the same chair. Really asking myself, what was all this for?
Yeah.
And if I was on the right track, if I should just pack and go back to Switzerland or mm-hmm. continue. And I think everyone is going through difficult times, but they are very personal.
Indeed. So we were talking about failure and what it means to you, and how do you celebrate it, and how do you explain it?
I think you have other words for failure: testing, mm-hmm. learning, mm-hmm. discovering. And I think that too often, if we are afraid of failing, will not even try anything new. And I think it's a pity. We should encourage anyone to try, to test. If you're on the wrong track, don't wait too long. Just change. Try again. Nobody has ever discovered anything just for the first time. Edison tried hundreds, if not thousands, times before he could discover electricity and the bulbs. What about penicillin? Pasteur discovered it. It was haphazardous as a process, and somehow, if he wouldn't have tried it, he would never have had this glimpse of luck.
But one would think that a company, a Swiss company, would be very intolerant of failure. Do you celebrate failure, or how do you cope with failure when somebody makes an honest mistake in this company?
Probably not enough, and that's why in the Middle East we, for already a number of years, we celebrate proud moments. And now we have embarked on celebrating proud learnings.
Right.
Because we feel it's very important that people feel comfortable in saying, look, genuinely, with good intent, I've tried something. The result was not as expected. And to help others to feel more comfortable with this notion of testing and trying and discovering.
I mean, you have young children. How old are they? How old are your children?
We have three sons,
okay.
19, 17, and 11.
Right.
The eldest is in Manchester, finishing his first year, mm-hmm. studying material sciences.
Okay.
The second and the youngest are here with us in Dubai.
And when they're learning, are you just letting them go and develop themselves, or you have a view of the world in terms of what your kids should do?
We really let them free to learn the way they feel appropriate for them to learn. I know that our two eldest, for instance, learn so much through digital.
Yeah.
Because today, just pressing a button,
yeah.
you can learn mathematics, physics, you yeah. can discover the world,
yeah.
which is something I didn't have. I was carrying books and reading page after page. So I think it's really supporting them, motivating them to learn in different ways, while also at times we engage on the limits,
right.
you know, because everything has pros and cons.
Yeah.
But it's very much today, I think that engaging with people, it's more about listening, supporting, much more than teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Because very often they know and they have experienced things we didn't. So the sharing
yeah.
Is very important.
What is your advice to a lot of young people, to tens of millions of people who will be watching you, in terms of getting their first job, getting their first break? What are the kind of things that you would recommend or you would advise them to be successful?
First and foremost is for them to follow their heart without leaving their brain behind.
Okay.
But I think it's very important to have a passion for what you do, irrespective of what that passion is all about.
Yeah.
But if you really strongly believe about something, you will definitely be able to make a difference. Secondly, don't give up if you hear no. Hearing no is just another way for you to understand that you have not yet been able to convince somebody in a relevant way. Yeah. So try again. Doesn't matter how many no's you hear, try again and again and again. Be open to advice,
sure.
Because you may at times reshape the way you want to present what you want to do, what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
But still keep to what you really feel is very close to your heart.
Jobs versus entrepreneurship. What would you recommend? I mean, you're founder 150 years ago was an entrepreneur, and he started, and that's what we have been. Our grandparents were entrepreneurs. Yes. Why are we stuck with jobs?
I think, first of all, you can be an entrepreneur even if you're working in a large corporation. Mm-hmm. I think just to classify, you know, jobs versus being entrepreneur is probably part of the past, mm-hmm. because things are evolving in a way that the two notions will become much more fluid. We will go through automation of a lot of tasks and transactional activities. We will need more and more people brains, people emotional quotient. I really see the evolution of life over time from IQ today being more and more EQ, not yet really having started SQ, and I think the spiritual aspect, the reason of being in this world will become more and more important. The whole notion of sustainability will employ a lot of brains. Will we be remunerated the way we are today? Probably not.
Yeah.
Because you have far too much on one side, you have far too little on the other side. Will we move to a situation where people will be guaranteed a minimum income? Probably yes, because I think we are moving towards a more balanced environment where we work together for the sustainability and the progress.
The social contract is changing, and I think a lot of the young people now need to recalibrate themselves with the new social contract. And I think part of that is happening. Would you hire temporary people? Would you hire part-time people, freelancers, and so on? In other words, they can still connect with Nestle without actually having an employee card and a stamp product.
You see, we are learning, and we have changed a number of aspects of working. Part-time is an option. The 100% full-time employment is not always the answer. That's why we very much welcome people who only want to work 50% of their time, sometimes 80%, depending also at the phase they are in their life.
Yes.
So I think this is something which we have to adapt in order to remain relevant.
How do you feel people moving jobs and changing things as they move forward in the current business environment?
Yes, some people redefine loyalty, saying, you know, in Japan when I started 33 years ago, it was employment for life.
Yes.
Today, if somebody stays 5 years, the individual is already loyal.
Yeah.
I think you have many ways to look at it. Flexibility is important.
Yeah.
I think myself, you know, I've been with the same company for 33 years, but in 10 different countries.
Right.
So probably my loyalty for every assignment was only 3 years, if you look at it that
indeed,
way.
Indeed, yeah.
And I think it's important, again, you follow your heart. You can contribute for a few years. You can even contribute on a specific project, on a specific mission, and you move on.
Yeah.
And I think this fluidity is also of high interest for the younger generation.
Okay. So my final question to you, Yves, is imagine we have taken those HoloLens and have a, I don't know, a spaceship, a time capsule, and we project ourselves to your 90th birthday, and we're all here celebrating your 90th birthday, what would we be saying? What has he done in his life? You're at the pinnacle of your life right now. You can keep going. You're at a good inflection point. What have you done in the next 30, 40 years of your life?
I hope that people will recognize that I am a constant learner. I mentioned earlier my obsession is all about growth, yeah. Becoming a better oneself.
Yeah.
And this is really, for me, one of the main aspects of life. Mm-hmm. Becoming a better myself, being able to touch people in a more effective way, and be able to contribute to our communities in a more relevant way.
And if your children come there and say, Dad just kept on learning and we had to keep pace with him, would that be a proud moment for you?
Yes, very much.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.